Talked about this verse a couple weeks ago, and I'd like to kind of revisit this. I've done a little bit more study on it, and I want to see, you know, I want to see what Paul is saying about debt, or if he's talking about debt, or what we can learn from this verse as we're talking about this topic of finance and owing things and debt. So let's turn there, Romans 13, and I'm just going to read to start. I'm just going to read verses 1 through 8. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore, you must be subject not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For because of this, you also pay taxes. For they are God's ministers, attending continually to this very thing. Render therefore to all their due. Taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs are due, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Owe no one anything except to love one another. For he who loves another has fulfilled the law. Okay. I want to take a few minutes and look at this a little bit more, and if we have any comments to make, then please share your comments. So like I said last time we looked at this, a couple weeks ago, if you translate verse 8 literally, it means to owe no one anything. Owe no one anything is how it translates literally. And at first glance, if you look at it like that, it seems like Paul is prohibiting us from borrowing anything. You can't borrow anything and owe it back to them. But like I said, I don't think that that's exactly what this verse is telling us. If we look at it in context with the rest of Scripture, you know, I don't think that's what it's saying. And there have been other preachers and teachers that have said that this verse completely, it does prohibit you from debt, from borrowing. You can't owe anything. But I don't think that that's what it's saying. To prove that, let's take the example of taxes. Who in here, raise your hand, who in here owes taxes to the government? I mean, you might pay them as you go. Like I pay them, since I'm self-employed, I have to pay them myself as time goes on. But everybody in here owes taxes, whether you owe it right now or you've been paying on it. We all owe that. And like Chris Hayes said last time we were talking about it, we all owe to God, we owe a debt that we cannot pay. We all owe that. I think it's impossible for us to be in a condition where we don't owe anything. So let's take a look and look at this a little bit deeper and try to find out what Paul's really saying here. Romans chapter 13 does indeed talk about being in subjection to authority. And Paul tells us in the first couple verses that all authority comes from God, and that we are to be in subjection to that authority. And if we resist the authority, then we resist God. In verse 6, he explains that we have an obligation to pay taxes to these same authorities. In verse 7, we are told to pay them what we owe, whether it be taxes, revenue, fear, honor, respect, and this is followed by verse 8, which says, owe no one anything except to love one another. So if you look at the Greek, I'm definitely not a Greek guy. I just got this from my Strong's Concordance. But if you look at the Greek, the word is translated owe, or in some versions, your version might say the dues, pay your dues, or instead of pay what you owe. The word is ophile. Okay? And I have it written down on your sheet there. Anybody get one? Alright. And that's the little pronunciation that I have in the Strong's as well. I think it's ophile. It's a plural noun meaning debt, or the sum owed, or the obligation. Plural noun meaning debt, the sum owed, or the obligation. It's the same word in verse 7 that's also used in verse 8 when he says, owe no one anything. The same word is used both times. So, a debt is an obligation. As soon as you agree to pay, to make payments on something, you have an obligation to pay it. And all of us understand that. I think all of us understand that if you make an agreement to pay something, you're under an obligation to pay that. Taxes are also an obligation that we must keep that we don't necessarily agree to. You know, we didn't really agree to, except maybe the way that you vote, that might, you know, be somewhat agreeing to pay the taxes. But we don't necessarily agree to that, but that is an obligation that we have. We also, let's say we borrow something from somebody, just like an item. Let's say we borrow somebody's pen to take notes, or somebody's pencil, right, Jared? We're obligated to give it. Or let's say we borrow somebody's truck or whatever that we need help to move something. We're obligated to give that item back in the same condition that it was owed. I mean, that we borrowed it. Yeah, or better, not broken in half, right? But we have that obligation. We owe it back to them in the same.
Better, you got pooping.
That's right. You just need to look at that. That's the way you view things, Jerry.
I just wanted two erasers too.
Oh, sorry. I'll hook you up with an eraser. The pencil's still over there, I think, if you want it. So, yeah, okay. So, but in the case of a loan, when we take out a loan, there's an expectation that it will be returned. That's a mother right there for you.
Yeah, I was going to say.
There's an expectation when we borrow money that it will be repaid within a certain time frame or whenever the money is requested back. So not returning the money and not returning the item is the way you agreed to is not meeting your obligation. Okay. So we're told to pay the authorities what's owed to them, such as taxes. Yet in the very next verse, we're told not to owe anything. But like I said, I think it's impossible for us to not owe anything. We all owe taxes. At some point, you know, we all owe our electric bill.
But if you really look at what he just said, he said, give the respect, give the honor, give the taxes. When then he says, owe no one anything, he's implying, don't have anything outstanding that you haven't given back.
Yes.
By your day.
That's where we're going.
Right.
Yeah. That's essentially where we're going. Just, if you owe something, pay it. And I think, also when I was looking at this, I think sometimes we use the word owe kind of loosely to refer to something that is for the future and also something that is a current obligation, future obligations versus current obligations. And, you know, if we don't pay our taxes when they're due, then we are owing and we haven't met our obligation. If we don't pay our electric bill when it's due, then we are found owing them. We haven't met our obligation. You know, so like right now, do we owe our taxes right now for next year's income?
Yes, because they've already spent it.
Well, good point. They've spent it for many years to come. But we don't have to pay them right now for next year's. Or we don't owe right now the electric bill for July. You know, those are future obligations, but we will owe them, but just not yet. So in the sense of Romans chapter 13, I think that he's talking about your current obligations, the things that you owe right now. And I believe this passage is telling us, just meet all your obligations. Pay what you owe, if you owe something, whether it's taxes, and I think it has a principle that goes beyond. Jimmy sent me an email after we had a discussion on this last time, and I agree with what he said. You know, it is talking about being subject to the governing authorities and paying your taxes and paying whatever is due to the governing authorities, but also it has a greater principle that goes beyond that. It's just saying, if you owe something, pay it. If you have any debt, pay it on time. Meet your obligations. Don't be negligent in meeting your obligations. Whatever it is, give it, pay it, whatever. And I also think that the NIV translation, like I brought up last time, it says, let no debt remain outstanding. I think that's a good... I think that brings it about a little bit better. Or it says it a little bit better, you know, that no debt remain outstanding. And then, of course, the last part of the verse, it says, except the continuing debt to love one another. In the church, loving one another is a debt that never ends. It's a continuing debt. We always need to be paying that. It says, for he who loves his fellow man has fulfilled the law. So, anybody have any other comments on that? I just wanted to make sure we were all clear and on the same page. Are we all on the same page as far as that goes?
I think you did a very good job there.
So,
sometimes it's the person translating. Like, say I've got the ESV and it says, oh, but the NIV, the way you say it, actually says it better because it explains what it's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times we just take what, like we could just take that one word.
Yeah.
You don't owe anybody.
Yeah.
Anything. But that's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
As you've explained.
Because of the word they chose in
Greek. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Because the Greek word says don't have an obligation. And that's different than owing. You know, an obligation is something we know. I'm obliged to do this. That's not considered a debt. It's something I've agreed to do. I have an obligation. I know I agreed to do this. When we consider a debt, it has a different connotation in our mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, don't have an obligation to anyone except to love them, because there's no way I can ever do that enough and say I'm done. Well, I've loved you all you need. I'm done. I mean, there's no way we could do that. And that makes a whole lot of sense. It's a lot of words in English just don't carry the weight they do in Greek. I mean, the Greeks either said, we want it this way, or we'll get another word to define it even more. You know,
mm-hmm.
And we have to be careful because, you know, we have words we use all the time. We throw them around and they lose their meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is what I said before, we have to take it in context of everything he's talking about. And you went back and did that, and it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But if and I'm sure there are a lot of people that just pull that out, so you can't help anybody.
Yeah, and that's not what I was trying to say last time.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that's another thing you have to do, though. You have to take it in context of what topic is he talking about, who's he doing. You're talking to, why is he doing that? You have to ask all those questions.
Yeah.
And then it kind of falls in line.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Okay, so we're going to kind of move on. There's a couple of loose ends that last week I wanted to get to that we didn't really have time for, of course. And actually, it goes back a couple weeks ago. Some of the things that we're going to talk about today that we're finally going to cover. So I went ahead and put them on today's outline, so you don't have to go back like for the last 2 weeks and fill in the blanks. You know, you just fill it out on the one outline. But there's a couple things that are listed that have been on last week and the week before. So one thing I'd like to kind of discuss, and if you have any thoughts about some of these, are some assumptions concerning debt. Assumptions that we make. And I think if we blindly enter into debt, and we don't prayerfully seek God's counsel, I think we're automatically, kind of like by default, we're making some assumptions about debt. First one, to kind of clarify, I'll give you an example. We need more than what God has given us. That's an assumption. We need more than what God has given us. How about God doesn't know best what our needs are? God doesn't know best what our needs are. How about this one? God has failed to provide our needs, forcing us to take matters into our own hand. Therefore, I'm going to go in debt to get whatever it is, because I need this. And God has failed to give it to me. If God doesn't come through the way we think He should, then we can find another way. If God doesn't come through the way we think He should, if we think we're supposed to have this car, or we think we're supposed to have whatever, and we think that God hasn't come through the way we think, then we can find another way to get the stuff. Here's another one. Just because today's income is sufficient to make our debt payments right now, tomorrow's will be too. Not necessarily true. In other words, saying your circumstances are not going to change. You're always going to be able to fulfill these obligations that you've committed to. What do y'all think about some of these assumptions?
That one hit us really hard because we assumed back when we, I guess goodness, we hadn't had kids yet, and Eric had a really, really good income. I had a fair income. We were both working full-time jobs. Didn't really lack for anything. And we were basing everything, living right to the edge, and basing everything that nothing would ever change, and it did. And then, you know, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul all the time because you didn't set up, even though we even had savings and we thought we were doing things like that, we didn't seek God in anything. If we wanted it, we felt justified in getting it. So we got it. And there was never a thought in the world of maybe we should really prayerfully consider sitting down and spending $2,000 on the treadmill. Because that's one thing that pops in mind. You know, but that's a good thing. It's exercise. That's a good thing. And, you know, we never prayerfully considered anything like that. So we assumed that was one of those purchases that happened right before everything went haywire with his health. And I remember seeing the bill laying there going, why do we have a $2,000 treadmill? It's the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life. But it made perfectly good sense when we went and got it. I mean, it was daylight and dark. The feeling you had then work basis, you know, now situations are totally different. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just, but yeah, we didn't do that at all as far as looking at tomorrow's end. We do now. We're like, hey, you know what? Next month might be different. Might not auto.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it definitely taught us a really, really difficult lesson. So that one speaks to me a lot.
A lot of people did that recently. Invested in the stock market and you're going to retire using that money, and the stock market just hit the bottom and they lost lots and lots of money, and now they're saying, well, I might not ever retire, or if I retire, I still might have to get a job and things like that. You just never can, can know. I get a retirement check from American General, which is owned by AIG. Well, AIG almost went under. If it hadn't been for the government giving them a bunch of money, which I'm glad they did, my retirement probably wouldn't have been there. And, you know, that's what I rely on is that check and Social Security to live. So you can't do that. I was also thinking, it goes back to what Rich said, wants and needs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There's certain things you need. There's certain things you want.
You walk down the road, you don't need a $2,000.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do. You hang clothes on them.
Yeah.
You know, it ended up scrapped for metal because they quit working after about a year.
He's hung clothes on. But, and I think about
coming for that.
The children of Israel were out there wandering for 40 years. How much manna did he give them every day? He gave them a day's work, except on Friday, and he gave me 2 days' worth because he wasn't supposed to work on Saturday. So, and if they got greedy and got more than a day's worth, it's four.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was the lesson he was trying to teach? You rely on me daily. Okay?
And we're not promised anything more than that, but he promises we'll take care of our basic needs.
Yeah.
And we never know. James chapter 4, is that where it says that you don't know what's going to happen?
Yeah.
You say, okay, well, today we'll go and buy and sell and make a profit, and then, you know, tomorrow we'll do this and whatever. But what's your life? It's a vapor.
Is that right?
What's your life? It's a vapor. You don't know what's going to happen. Today you're here, tomorrow you might not be. Today you have this job, tomorrow you might not. I mean, Dad works for the government. Well, no, he for the United States Postal Service.
Yeah.
And it seems like a secure job, right? I mean, and it is. I mean, it's pretty secure in terms of our standard. But none of us are guaranteed we'll have that. Tomorrow he might not. It's just the way it goes, you know? So I feel like sometimes, you know, we take matters into our own hand. And some of these assumptions, like I'm saying, if God has failed to provide for us the way we think he should, then we can find another way. Or we can take matters into our own hands.
When you said that a minute ago, I thought of Abraham. Yeah, Abraham. Sometimes my mind just goes actually for it. Because God told he and Sarah that they were going to have a son. But then it didn't happen immediately. And so he decided to take it in his own hands. And he had a son by her concubine. And look at the trouble that has been caused throughout history because of that decision. Yeah, I mean, there are consequences to our actions. And that one has nothing to do with the topic that we're talking about, except for the point that he made a decision to take it upon himself. God wasn't fast enough. And,
yeah, that's great.
And so, because of that, the conflict in the world ever since. Because of that decision.
Mm-hmm.
There are consequences for our actions.
Yeah. But is there any comments about some of these assumptions? Y'all agree that you would be making these assumptions if you don't prayerfully consider and seek God's counsel before you're going into that?
There's people on the other hand that are going to make that easy for it to be accomplished too. Because if you want something bad enough, they're wanting you to get in debt badly enough also.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you've got somebody that's going to sit down at Sears and say, you know, you might not have reconsidered this.
Oh, they're going
to
do the opposite.
Yeah, you know, you might not
have,
since this didn't go through the first time or the second time, or you know, you might not have just, you know, considered, is this really within your budget? I mean, now you've got your own problem, and then you've got somebody else that wants you to fail just as bad as Satan does, because they want to line their pocket. So it's not like you can look towards anybody, you know, out there in the world of finance or whatever. There's not really anybody that's going to try to steer you right.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to buy something, you know, you shouldn't be buying it. So that's...
No, gladly give you the credit.
And there too. We'll find a way.
I think part of the reason we make a lot of purchases that we can make is to continue to live in the way too fast-paced world, whether it's technology or vehicles or whatever else we're so caught up in living like the rest of the world lives or not. I find I do better when I slow down and notice who's in charge instead of assuming that the world is compelling. Because vehicles buy, or the new phones, or the better internet, or the better cable, or I mean, all those purchases, and they're just extra on top of living a normal, slower life. I mean, if you slow down a little bit and not be involved in everything, it just makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you view those purchases?
Everything you listed was a luxury.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd also like to talk about just some more thoughts that I had that I came across when I was studying this. Mainly two things. If we're not being responsible, debt has the potential to get us into a lot of trouble, doesn't it? It certainly does. And I think that those who have convictions to stay out of debt will normally find a way to avoid debt. If you're already convicted in the first place to stay out of debt, you will probably find a way to avoid it. Whereas those who might not have a strong conviction to stay out of debt will probably inevitably find the need to borrow. And, you know, it just seems like the ones that have the more inclined you are to go into debt, the more probable it is that you shouldn't. It's a thought that I had. The more inclined you are to go in debt, the more probable it is that you shouldn't go in debt.
Actually, the more you're looking for the easy way out,
yeah,
the more likely you are to be in trouble.
And you'll find it.
Right. Because
kind of
debt is really the easy way. Because I can get it now. It's so simple. They'll bend over backwards to give me 50% more than I make. Well, I mean, that ought to tell you something. If they're going to give you 150% of what you can pay, they don't want you to pay it back. They want you to be ever in debt to them. Because
mm-hmm.
that's where they make their money. They don't make it on the payment of the principal. They want the interest forever and ever and ever.
And look at the size of their buildings compared to the size of your house.
Oh, I like their buildings. They keep
that's
me
true.
Busy. We do some really nice paint.
Yeah.
And they get the nice faucets, and, you know, we don't have many banks telling us, oh, you need to cut the budget on this building. We don't have any money for it.
They definitely have it. And the interest you get, let's say you buy a CD or something. But right now, if you got 3%, probably you're doing really, really good. Well, they're charging you 15% on the credit card, so just figure who's getting all the money.
They're making
it's
a killing. I have another quote. One of the books that I'm reading is called Managing God's Money by Randy Alcorn. And I have a quote that I'd like to read to you guys and just see what you think. Now, kind of the background of this is Matthew chapter 6. You know, when God is saying that he will provide for our needs, like we were kind of mentioning a few minutes ago. He will provide for our needs. I'm going to read this to you. I kind of want y'all's thoughts on this too. How do we have? All right, here we go. It's one thing to trust God to provide for our present needs. It's another to presume upon him by dictating the terms of his future provision. Do we dare try to maneuver God into a position by which we significantly increase our future needs through debt, then claim he's promised to meet our needs? In such cases, debt is not only unwise. In such cases, is everybody getting this?
Yeah.
Okay. In such cases, I know it's cute, but I couldn't think. In such cases, debt is not only unwise, but evil. To expect God to meet needs that we manufacture through indebtedness is an attempt to manipulate the Almighty. Assuming the role of master, we demote God to the obedient genie who exists to grant our wishes, underwrite our causes, and fulfill our agendas. What y'all think? Did y'all get it? Are we going in debt and increasing what our needs are? In order to make all the payments on our debt, we're increasing our needs. And then we turn to God and say, well, we expect you to provide what our needs are, but we are manufacturing our own needs. Are we increasing our needs? I mean, I can see what he's saying. Is that an attempt to manipulate God? What do you think? I just thought it was an interesting thought. I had never thought of it that way. I read that and I thought, yeah.
Actually, just before you read that, my mind was running back to the parable Jesus told. In Luke chapter 12, he tells the parable in response to a question where one brother says, my brother won't share his inheritance with me. And he gives the parable of the man who has such abundance that he says, I need to build bigger barns so that I can live well. Right? And
the response from God is, you fool. Don't you know this night your soul will be required of you? Because you have created that image in your mind, you know, that God has blessed me so much that I can do whatever I want with it, flipping exactly what he was saying. We impose on God our condition. And he's coming back to say, no, I still have conditions, and guess what? What you should have been thinking about is not the things I gave you. Your soul is, today is mine. You know, if we have that in mind first, every day, then our decisions become very clear. What is the most important thing?
Our soul.
Stuff in my house that I have to fix constantly, that breaks every time I touch it? Or my relationship to God that is stronger and stronger and stronger every time I touch it? Because the more I touch it, the better it gets. The other way around, the more we use stuff, it gets worse. Because we're wearing it out. And yet, that's what we want to be like. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't make any sense, but that's who we are.
My mother trips me out. She's 92. She raised two boys on her own. And I never thought about it until I was grown. You know, when I was, I guess, thought I was mature. Then I looked back and thought, well, how in the world did she do that? I mean, raising two kids by herself, she paid a housemate, my son. She paid the electric bill, the water bill, all the bills that we have to pay. She put clothes on our backs. We had food on the table. I mean, she just always took care of us. But even right now, my mother, she clips coupons out of the Sunday paper, and we go to Buy-Rite or CVS or Walgreens because she can get it a little cheaper. What she doesn't realize is I'm spending that gas going around doing it. But what I'm saying is she takes care of her money. She says, I want to be able to have the money to pay my debts, what I owe. Well, she don't make that much to begin with. But her banking account's a whole lot bigger than mine. She had me write a check for $1,500, and she said, I put it in the money market account she's got, but because her checking account was too high. She didn't want that much in her checking account. I wish my checking account looked like hers. But what I'm saying is, she didn't have a lot of wants as such. She met the needs. And when I was growing up, I didn't think about it. You know, all those things that kids nowadays think about. I got to have this cell phone because everybody else got a cell phone and it's got to get on the internet and all that. It costs $100 a month. I didn't think stuff like that. Mother provided us what we needed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and I think it's the way she sees things differently. I mean, of course, maybe she had to do it that way, but anyway, she doesn't think about stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it does make a big difference when you have to do it versus you have to choose to do it. It makes, I know I've been on both. What's the Bible verse that says, I know what it is to be hungry, I know what it is to, you know, to be have plenty, I know what it is to be, you know, I know it is, it, you know, and I can kind of look back, not that old, but I can look back and see, I do know what it is to be in some of those situations and wonder what's going to happen. But it's very easy to make a difficult decision when you don't really have anything to make a decision with. Very difficult to make a decision when you actually have it sitting there in front of you to go, you know, I'll have to, or I do this, but, you know, based on needs, based on wants, when you don't have anything to mess with or to manipulate or to do, of course it's easy to sit, I'm not saying nothing about, you know, that situation, but it is difficult when you, I think it's sometimes even harder when you have more to do with.
No,
because
but what he was referring to as another is,
right.
It was ingrained a
right,
lifestyle.
That's her mentality.
And now, even though she has the abundance to do whatever she wants,
right.
She still knows that I am a steward of what is given, and I have to treat it as if it's God's.
But But it, but with our kids, today and the things that, that we're seeing today and the amount of stuff they're given and the amount of stuff that's being required for them, that's kind of where I get, everything gets very difficult for me because it's needs versus wants versus the world saying you have to have it versus, you know, making these decisions. And when you have the money to make the decision, I think you're in an even more difficult spot. Sometimes it's easy to say, well, I'm broke. You can't have it. You know, we don't have it to get for you. But sometimes I can just, I just kind of saw that churn as he described that and that flip around and say it's very difficult. It's a whole lot easier to just go buy it if you have the money to buy it with. So, you know, I don't know. Just a thought.
But.
No, but that, you know, you hit it dead on. Are we trying to be the world? Or are we trying to be God? You know, we'll never match the world. Can't do it. It'll never make us happy. We'll never be content. Because, you know, God started out and gave them everything. They weren't happy with it. You know, if it's true when there's just Adam and Eve in the garden that God created that was perfect, then how do we think we can be any better? And yet we still do every day. You know, everyone in the room has their same problems, and it's been that way since the beginning of time. How do we deal with it? That's the important part. First, you got to decide, I am not going to be what the world is. I don't care if everybody has what they have. The challenge becomes, how do we teach our children we are not what everybody else is?
That's a lot harder. That's a lot harder.
But we have to do that at every step and say, we don't need this because. We don't want this because. This will cause a problem if we do it because. My dad could have bought me a car. He didn't. It was the best thing he ever did. Because he was teaching me something. When it broke, he said, I can fix it for you. I'm not going to. I'll be right next to you as long as you're out there working on it. The minute you quit, I quit. He was a professional mechanic before he went in the Army. He could have fixed it in about one quarter of the time it took me. But he wasn't going to, because that was part of the process of new learning.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look back through the Old Testament, God is trying to teach his children constantly. And every time they ignore him, we find the consequence. We read through those stories, but we don't really get it. Every time they ignore him, we see the consequence. And yet we don't correlate, every time I ignore him, there's a consequence. That's the Israelites. You know, they did all these dumb things. That's the Old Testament. I don't have to worry about that. No. It was there to teach me, and yet I don't want to be taught. I want to believe that I can do what I want, and there are no consequences. I can hit my finger with a hammer, and it doesn't turn blue. It doesn't work, because I did it yesterday. It still works. You know? And yet we think we can keep hitting ourselves with a hammer and it doesn't hurt.
Well, thanks for everybody's comments. I think we probably are next week going to move on to a different topic. We've been talking about debt for a few weeks. And so as we close today, I kind of had some things I wanted to say. Since I'm teaching the class, I was going to kind of give my own...
Oh, you're going to pull a gym on it.
My own thought.
I'm sorry.
That's right.
So I can do what I want.
Kind of. So just be a few minutes, but I just kind of wanted to, I guess, rant for a second. And so if y'all would, I don't know. But in doing so, I was going to ask a few rhetorical questions. You don't necessarily have to answer these as I'm asking them, and I'm not trying to step on anybody's toes in particular, okay? This is just culture or society in general. Okay, so is there anybody in here who has ever been just fine with the way things are going? You're going to work, you're making an income, you're able to make all of your payments, and then all of a sudden, you know, like slap, you get slapped with something. And because you have the payments and because you have all this other stuff going on, then you're not able to take care of this emergency that's come up. And you're not able to take care of it as well because you have these other payments. I want to ask you about insurance. There's a lot of families in America that don't have the proper insurance in place. And it's mainly for two reasons. Number one is ignorance. And not that ignorance is necessarily bad. You know, we always need to be learning, but a lot of people just don't know what insurance can do for them, or that they even need certain types of insurance. You know, so they're ignorant in that way. So we just need to learn about it. But I think another reason why a lot of families don't have the proper insurance in place is because they have so many other financial obligations that they need to meet. They don't think that they can afford these insurances. You know, they have these debts and all these other things to pay that, like, well, by the time I pay all this, I can't afford the insurance. Now, I'm talking about, like, of course, everybody, if anybody owns a car, you have car insurance. If anybody owns a house, you have your home insurance. And, of course, probably everybody in here has health insurance. But I'm talking about, too, like, disability insurance. You know, if you get injured and you, like, for us right now, I provide everything in our house. Samantha doesn't work. If I get hurt, I got you, Rich. But I mean, I'm the one going out there and working. If I get hurt, then we don't have an income. So, you know, I need to have disability insurance where if I get hurt, we can still make our home payment, that kind of thing. Life insurance is another big thing. We need to make sure that if something bad happens to one of us, that we're taking care of our family. You know, and these are things that a lot of families don't have. And a big reason for it is because they have so many other debts and things. And so they feel like they can't afford it. So are we putting our families at risk by not having these types of insurance, the proper types of insurances in place, so that we can have the extra car, you know, to have the nice new whatever, so that we're making payments on this and we don't have the insurance in place? Okay, what about this? Who has ever hidden a purchase or purchases from your spouse or another loved one? What about this? Who in here has ever just thoroughly enjoyed making payments? You know, you sit down and you're just like, ah, yes, I'm glad I'm making my car payment this month. Jerry?
Yeah.
You do?
Should I kiss out of the beta this month? It's done.
Or like your credit card, you know, you just sit there and you're like, oh, I'm so glad to pay off Best Buy card or, you know, whatever, Macy's or whatever store credit card you have or the MasterCard. You know, I'm just so thankful that I can do that. Of course not. I mean, you know, we don't enjoy these things. We need to have the right insurance. And we need to be able to take care of emergencies as they come up. So, but why do we do this to ourselves? Why do we do it to ourselves? And yes, we're doing it to ourselves. I mean, if you want to look for somebody to blame, look no further than in the mirror. I think, this is my opinion, I think it is time that we rein in our lifestyles, that we rein in our standard of living. I think it's time that we learn how to say no to ourselves. It's time that we no longer live at the very ends of our means, you know, paycheck to paycheck and just stretched to our limit. Instead, it's time that we learn how to live below our means. That's the only way to do it. If you want to live the life without debt, the only way to do it is to live below your means. To actually make and live by a written monthly plan. All the budget sometimes. It's the only way. And actually leave yourself some breathing room in the budget as opposed to trying to stretch yourself. You're like, well, I've got this much extra every month. You know, I'm going to buy something else so I can fill up this, you know. And you're just stretching yourself and putting yourself under another obligation or another monthly payment. And I think that if we do this, if we actually live on less than we make and budget our money out monthly, it will dramatically decrease the amount of stress that we have in our lives, the amount of tension that we have within our relationships, and we will be better able and also freer to be servants of God, which that's what God calls us to do. living this life of going to work and working so hard and bringing in the income only to have, you know, to bring in that money, and then, you know, if we bring in this much, we're also putting out this much, making payments for this and that, and our lives being strained. I mean, that life is for the birds. And God doesn't want us to live that type of life. Samantha and I have been married for 4.5 years now. It's gone by pretty quick. But for the last 3.5 years, we've been debt-free. And I don't say that to get your kudos. You know, I'm sincerely not looking for your applause. What I'm saying is we've seen both sides. You know, I've been there with the debt. I had student loans. I had, you know, my van payment. I had, when I was in flight school, I took out extra loans so that I could pay my flight instructor and pay for the airplane time, you know, and all that. I've seen both sides. And I also seen now what it's like to not live in that bondage. And I'm totally convinced, beyond all shadow of doubt, that living on this side is so much better. It's far better. It's a very rare occasion when me and Samantha have any disagreement or dispute or argument. It's very rare when we argue about money. Not because I bring in just a whole ton of money, I promise, that's not why. It's because we live on less than we make. We budget our money. We're on the same page on at least a monthly basis, and sometimes more often than that, about how we're going to use the money that God has blessed us with. And we live on less than we make, and we don't have any more obligation besides our house, aside from our home. I meant to say that a minute ago. No other debt obligations to pay. And I can tell you now, after seeing both sides, there's no way that I want to go back to the other side. Not for a car. Not for anything. Any silly electronic equipment or any business venture that I've had people approach me, and with the business side of men, they're like, well, you can do this, but it's this much money. I'm like, oh, thank you. Not going into debt for that. You know, not for anything. There's nothing that I love enough to go back that direction. And if we did have additional financial obligations, other payments to make, then Samantha would not be able to stay at home. She would have to work. And that opens up a whole new aspect of our lives that we want to protect. I fully believe that God wants me and wants us to display these things in our lives. He wants us, as Christians, to display love, joy, peace, you sound familiar, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control.
What was that?
Self-control.
What was that?
Self-control. Rich liked to stress that a lot in our class. It's very important. It's self-control. In our 4th and 5th grade boys' class.
Have you ever read that and looked at the progression of those?
You've pointed it out before.
I believe they're in an order for a reason. Because they're all based on the one before it.
Love.
If you don't have love, you won't have any joy. You can't have peace if you don't have love and joy.
Yeah.
You won't be gentle. Yeah. There won't be any goodness if you're not kind. And you can't have self-control if you don't have all of those before. And that's the one that, without which, we can't get the ones before. It's that experience issue.
So,
but that's why the Spirit gives it to us. Because we can't do it. Every time we think we can do something, we get reminded how frail we really are. And that's what I think you're headed for, is I can't do this by myself.
Mm-hmm.
But God will help me.
But those are things that God wants us to display in our lives, all of us.
Absolutely.
And I've found that I can display those things easier and better by not being financially obligated to so many people and creditors and that kind of thing.
You're not being pulled in two directions.
Right, exactly. And I know there's a lot more to those things. Those are matters of the heart and that kind of thing. And there's a lot more to the fruit of the Spirit than just, you know, financial things. But I found that not having stresses like that in finances has helped a lot in not in being able to show those types of characteristics in my life. So as for me and my family, if I can steal a few words from Joshua, as for me and my family, our mind is made up, like I mentioned last week. And we're going to listen to the warnings that God has given us, that we've talked about for the last week about death. We're going to listen to the warnings. And our mind is made up. You don't have to ask us if we're going to live our whole lives in debt, because the answer is no. And you don't have to ask us if we're even going to consider being a slave to the lender, because the answer is no. And you don't have to ask us if we're going to live our lives in a condition that God calls a curse, because the answer is no. That's the decision that we've made. And what you do, and the decisions that you make for your family, of course, that's up to you. I'm just hoping that, you know, through the study that we've had the last few weeks, and the things that we've discussed and talked about, you know, have helped you be more prepared about what we're getting ourselves into when we decide to go into debt. So, that's all I have. Thanks for your comments. Thanks for letting me rant. It's 10:08.